Before the file begins, set the calendar back 34 years. It is 1992. You do not carry the internet in your pocket. You probably do not know anyone who has seen the World Wide Web. Music is an object, a cassette in the car, a compact disc in the living room, a signal found by turning a radio dial.
The Cold War has just ended. The Gulf War has just demonstrated a different kind of military power, precision, communication, information.
A personal computer is a machine on a desk. It helps write, calculate, draw, and publish. It does not yet follow its owner through the day. A telephone is connected to a place. A camera forgets nothing, only after someone develops the film.
But the pieces of another world are already present. Roughly a million computers are connected to the internet. At CERN, the first web server is running on a black Next workstation. The web has no graphical browser for the public yet. It is mostly an idea moving between researchers.
And Steve Jobs is standing in front of a room explaining why software is about to move beyond helping managers make documents.
He calls the next frontier operational productivity, custom applications that do not merely describe an institution, but make its products and processes possible. Near the start, he invokes the Pentagon's chief information officer on a lesson from the Gulf War. The best software will win the war.
11 years later, DARPA will propose LifeLog, a system that does not merely help a person remember, but turns the flow of that person's experience into structured, searchable, operational information.
That is the distance this file crosses, from a workstation on a desk to a life inside a database. Open the tape.
Officer, CIO of a very large organization called the Pentagon. And they really understand software there. I had a conversation with him not too long ago, and he said the lesson from the Gulf War was that the best software will win the war. And so they're trying to do a lot of work in the software area.
Before we open LifeLog, identify the institution. What is DARPA, and why does it exist?
The Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency is the United States military's high-risk research agency. It was created in February 1958 after the Soviet launch of Sputnik. The shock was not simply that another country had placed a satellite in orbit. It was that the United States had been strategically surprised by technology.
And the answer was a permanent organization devoted to avoiding the next surprise.
Avoiding it and creating it for the United States. DARPA's initial research thrusts were space technology, ballistic missile defense, and solid propellants. Its remit later spread across computing, networks, stealth, autonomous systems, biology, materials, and artificial intelligence.
That origin matters because DARPA does not wait for a mature requirement. Its purpose is to make a consequential possibility real before the conventional system is ready to ask for it.
LifeLog was not a database ordered from a catalog. It was a wager on what information could become. Does DARPA build and operate these systems itself?
Usually, no. Program managers define temporary high-risk programs. Universities, laboratories, startups, and defense contractors perform the research. DARPA funds prototypes and demonstrations. If a capability succeeds, a transition partner carries it toward military deployment, intelligence use, or commercialization.
Then cancellation is not the same thing as deletion.
Correct. A branded program may end while its researchers, contractors, code, methods, and component technologies continue. The agency's own history includes technologies that moved into operational agencies or civilian life, the foundations of the internet, miniaturized global positioning receivers, automated speech recognition, and other systems.
This is the missing institutional logic in the LifeLog story. DARPA's output is not always a permanent DARPA service. Often it is proof that a capability can exist, followed by diffusion.
So the proper question is not only did LifeLog survive, it is what parts were made possible and where could they travel? Put numbers on the institution and the portfolio, how much money and how many horses in the race.
DARPA's enacted budget for fiscal year 2026 is $4.322 billion. That is the entire agency across all technical fields. It is not a LifeLog budget.
Then isolate the information awareness field.
A Congressional Research Service reconstruction identified 16 related research and development efforts. Together, they received an estimated $137.5 million in fiscal year 2003 and $317 million across fiscal years 2001 through 2003.
They included identity at a distance, evidence extraction and link discovery, Genesis database integration, biosurveillance, machine translation, and collaborative decision tools such as Genoa. DARPA called the integrating TIA architecture a program of programs.
How much was spent on LifeLog itself?
The public record does not support assigning those totals to LifeLog. LifeLog was cancelled at the solicitation stage before the proposed research became a mature operational program. Its direct expenditure is not established by the portfolio figures.
That distinction makes the argument stronger. LifeLog was not one giant funded machine that disappeared. It was one proposed personal substrate inside a broad funded campaign to make fragmented information operational.
Kill one horse and the field keeps running. New file, an hour-long recording about Next, custom software, and computer manufacturing. Tell me why it belongs anywhere near LifeLog.
Because it describes the world that had to exist before LifeLog could be proposed. Not a direct connection. Intellectual prehistory. The talk appears to be Steve Jobs speaking in the early 1990s, a decade before DARPA announced LifeLog.
So we are not claiming Steve Jobs built LifeLog.
No. We are tracing an architecture strategic software, custom operational applications, object-oriented systems, databases, portable computers, networks, and feedback loops. By 2003, those pieces could be turned toward the domain of a human life.
Then establish the intersection. Start with the Pentagon.
Near the beginning, Jobs discusses Paul Strassman, then the Pentagon's chief information officer. He recounts Strassman's lesson from the Gulf War: the best software will win the war.
That is a remarkable line, but how does it get us to LifeLog?
It changes the chronology. LifeLog did not emerge from an agency that suddenly became interested in personal information in 2003. It followed more than a decade of treating software, databases, and information integration as operational military capabilities.
1991, the Gulf War demonstrates information advantage. Through the 1990s, networks, custom applications, portable hardware, and databases mature. After September 11th, the Information Awareness Office builds a portfolio around pattern recognition. In 2003, LifeLog proposes to capture and structure the flow of one person's experience. In 2004, Assist narrows the architecture to soldiers.
The surveillance story begins earlier than the surveillance program.
Correct. It begins with software becoming strategy.
He found out that the not-so-successful ones spent the majority of their money on management productivity, and the more successful ones spent the majority of their money on operational productivity applications, right? Now, this was not very pleasant for me to read because I spent the first 10 years of my life on management productivity, which was PCs, right? PCs and Macs never attacked operational productivity.
Jobs names another precursor directly, Project Athena. What did Athena encompass?
An institution-wide computing environment. Networked workstations and servers, common identity through Kerberos, distributed files and software, messaging, printing, and a graphical interface. A user could enter the same computational surroundings from different machines.
Athena was not a life recorder, and it was not a surveillance project. Its precursor role is architectural. It made identity, memory, communication, and tools persist around an authenticated person.
And LifeLog reverses the direction.
Athena placed the person inside a persistent computing environment. LifeLog proposed placing the person's experience inside a persistent computational model.
Listen to Jobs describe the handoff. Research projects develop the recipe, then product organizations carry the ingredients into ordinary life.
For example, Project Athena is going away. Like, the support for IBM and DEC is going.
Right.
I mean, I'm talking about not just selling computers, I'm talking about establishing a network of an institutionalized system of networks.
Well, what's happening is, so the Project Athena's didn't succeed for a reason. They didn't succeed because they had a lot of good ideas as a research project, but the people necessary to commercialize those things and make them into real products aren't necessarily the same people that are going to pioneer the ideas at a university like MIT. And so those projects never quite get baked. The recipe's kind of developed, and you make a few samples, and it's pretty good, but the computer industry is pretty advanced, and so other people pick up those ideas and make them into real products, and they kind of leave the research projects in the dust.
Jobs makes a distinction between management productivity and operational productivity. Translate it.
Management productivity means documents, spreadsheets, presentations, helping a person perform office work. Operational productivity means software that changes how the institution itself functions. A trading system, a hospital system, a custom application, without which the product or process does not exist.
And LifeLog belongs to the second category.
Firmly, it was not intended to be a passive digital diary. It would capture events, represent people and relationships, retrieve prior context, discover patterns, and anticipate what the subject might need next.
That gives us the central formulation. LifeLog was an attempt to make recorded human experience computationally operational. Storage supplied the archive, structure and inference supplied the power.
Not simply remembering a person, making the person available to software.
Precisely.
Yeah, it's a Salesforce, and it's a custom app to bang on databases to make the product real, to do the mortgage swaps or whatever it is you want to do. Without the app, you don't have a product.
Next was selling object-oriented software. LifeLog called for an ontology-based system. Same thing?
No. They are distinct technical concepts, and we should not collapse them. But they share a foundational move, translating a complicated domain into structured entities with identities, types, behaviors, and relationships.
Give me the LifeLog objects.
A person, a place, a conversation, a purchase, a document, an activity, a relationship, an event. Then connect each one to time, participants, context, and every other relevant object.
Continuous capture by itself produces an unmanageable stream. The ontology turns the stream into a world that software can query. The decisive component is not the microphone or camera. It is the model of the person and everything around them.
The sensors see. The ontology decides what the system has seen.
And the inference layer decides what it means.
And one of the ways, the way we do this is we enable the developer to use a lot of objects that others have written. We ship 6 years' worth of objects with NextStep. You can create your own objects for your own company and then reuse them around your developers. And there's now independent third-party companies not selling system software.
Jobs also talks about technology windows opening. Why is that useful here?
Because LifeLog is a textbook convergence. The ambition to record an entire life was old. What changed was that several unrelated technologies became practical at roughly the same time.
Inventory them.
Portable computing, digital cameras and microphones, global positioning, wireless networking, cheap storage, mature databases, machine learning, semantic representations. No single component creates LifeLog. Their convergence opens the window.
And the commercial inheritance opens a second window. Smartphones supply continuous capture. Platforms supply identity and relationships. Cloud systems supply centralized memory. Wearables supply bodily telemetry. Large language models supply a conversational inference layer.
The original project needed a research subject covered in experimental equipment. The modern subject buys the equipment
and carries it voluntarily, upgrades it regularly, and pays for the network connection.
I believe that you can use the concept of technology windows opening, you know, and then eventually closing. But, and what I mean by that is enough technology, usually from fairly diverse places, comes together and makes something that's a quantum leap forward possible. And it doesn't come out of nowhere. If you poke around the labs and you hang around, you know, the media lab here at MIT.
This is where people jump to Facebook. DARPA kills LifeLog on the same day Facebook launches. Why not call that the connection?
Because coincidence is not evidence of transfer. The recording offers a better model. Jobs says Apple did not anticipate desktop publishing as the Macintosh's defining application. Users and developers discovered it, and Apple reorganized around what emerged.
Meaning a system can discover its most important function after deployment.
Yes, Facebook did not need to be secretly designed as LifeLog. Social networks, smartphones, payments, wearables, and assistants could independently evolve toward the same functional architecture because the incentives pointed in that direction.
The weak claim is that Facebook was a covert continuation of a DARPA program. The stronger claim is that commercial systems independently filled LifeLog's schema, then normalized it through convenience, entertainment, and consumer adoption.
Emergent does not mean harmless.
Nor does it mean accidental, in effect.
We'd like to change that ratio. We're on the right track, anyway. When we did the Macintosh, we never anticipated desktop publishing when we created the Mac. Sounds funny. Because that turned out to be the Mac's compelling advantage, right? The thing that it did not 1.5 or 2 times better than everything else, but you know, 4 or 5 times better than anything else, where you had to have one. We never anticipated it. We anticipated bitmap displays and laser printers, but we never thought about PageMaker or that whole industry really coming down to the desktop. Maybe we weren't smart enough. But we were smart enough to see it start to happen 9 to 12 months later. And we changed our entire marketing and business strategy to focus on...
At the end of the recording, Jobs talks about factories and warehouses. That sounds far from personal surveillance.
The metaphor travels well. He describes 2 expensive pieces of factory automation and realizes that both are merely high-tech warehouses. They accumulate inventory and delay the quality feedback loop.
Apply it carefully.
A personal data archive that only accumulates events is another high-tech warehouse. LifeLog's deeper ambition was to close the loop, convert stored experience into timely interpretation and action.
A warehouse stores past events. A LifeLog-style system interprets present context. A warehouse waits for a query. An inference system anticipates a need. A warehouse describes the subject. An operational system acts upon the subject.
And today's platforms have shortened that loop.
Observation can alter a recommendation, ranking, feed, price, risk score, or intervention almost immediately. The archive watches the consequences of its own decision and learns again.
And I realized, unfortunately too late, that both of them are warehouses. They're just high-tech warehouses. And so when we looked at...
There is one human lesson in the talk. Jobs says he learned to take a longer view of people.
When someone made a mistake, his goal became helping that person learn, instead of immediately taking over. That intersects with LifeLog at the ethical level.
Because a perfect memory does not forgive.
A complete record can support reflection, but it can also prevent forgetting. If every error becomes a permanent machine-readable feature, the system may freeze a person into historical behavior instead of recognizing growth.
Then ask the question plainly.
Is total memory designed to help a person change or to ensure that institutions never have to revise their judgment of them?
That may be the most personal question LifeLog leaves behind.
And that is, I now take a longer-term view on people. In other words, when I see something not being done right, my first reaction isn't to go fix it. It's to say, we're building a team here, and we're going to do great stuff for the next decade, not just the next year. And so, what do I need to do?
Close the file. What thesis does this recording add to LifeLog?
LifeLog was not simply a proposal to remember everything. It was a proposal to turn human experience into operational software.
The sensor supplied the raw inventory, the ontology gave it structure, the inference layer closed the feedback loop. What changed after 2004 was not the architecture, but who deployed it, how it was financed, and what counted as consent.
So the recording belongs before the LifeLog story, as the window opening.
Yes, not proof of a hidden lineage, evidence that the necessary way of thinking was already in place.
The archive was becoming a model, the model was becoming an application, and the application was learning to act.
End of supplemental debrief.